And welcome back, footy fans. It has come. We've done the sandful. We've done the waffle. We've got to talk the VFL and VFLW with the VFL and VFLW Vantage. And joining me, my awesome co-host who knows everything, or at least he tries, on the VFL and VFLW, Mr. Brendan Rhodes. Brendan, great to see you, sir.
Yeah, great to be back again. Another season getting close to going, Donnie, and obviously excitement building all over the world, not just here in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I know we've got a little bit of time from when we're recording until the start of the seasons, with the end of March being when both competitions get started. But I wanted to sit down and have a chat with the AFL breathing down our neck. I wanted to be sure and get the last state league covered. So we'll jump into it, sir. I've been going through, as we just discussed off mic, some of the things that you have been doing for the awesome AFL website. Just really quickly, a little bit about some of the off-season happenings in both the VFL and VFLW. I know it's so hard to keep up with so many teams, as we were discussing, 32 teams that you have to keep an eye on. So I do apologize for this. Just a few of the happenings that have happened both in the men's and women's comps in Victoria.
Well, it certainly is a fair bit happening, as you said, when there's so many teams. So the biggest one, and I'm sure you touched on it last week, is the return of the state game for the first time since 2017. The Big V will be in action on Gather Round when Victoria takes on South Australia over in Adelaide. It should be an absolute cracker. The two states, the two old rivals, haven't played since 2016, and Victoria hasn't played since 2017 when they lost to WA. So it's great to see that back. And that was a big part of the off-season announcements, bringing that one in. We had the, and we'll touch on it shortly, we had the announcement that Sydney and GWS will be playing a small part in the VFLW competition, which puts me up to 35 teams I've got to follow now. So just to make it a little bit more difficult, but it's great to see. Great to see them building, and hopefully it's a precursor for even more involvement from them in the competition. We've also got a fair bit going on around the potential new Tassie AFL team, Tasmania. We'll see what happens in the state election over there coming up next month, but all going well, the plans for that are for Tasmania to be in the VFL and potentially VFLW as soon as next year. So that will just add to it as well, if it all gets off the ground. So we wait and see. Once there's been no changes, of course, to the top 10. We're going with that again, with the wild card in the VFL, the top six in the VFLW. A little bit of a fixture change there, in that, of course, with the Swans and the Giants being in the competition, changes things up a bit. But yeah, apart from that, there's just been absolute stars coming into the competition. There's been stars going out of the competition. We're up to 25 players who were either listed or played a game in the VFL last season who have found themselves on AFL lists since last year's mid-season draft, which is a massive fill-up for the competition. And it proves that even if you're 26 like Sean Manor or 17-year-old Harley Reid, who was going to be the number one draft pick and played a couple of games last year, you can come in and get a good grounding and play some good footy in the VFL, and they're going to look at you, and you can get a chance.
Yeah, and I remember we talked about that in one of the late ones about Manor. Could he find his way onto an AFL list? And when I heard his name on draft day, there was a little bit of a smile. I almost messaged you when I heard that, going, we kind of called it. We said there's a good shot with it. It was such a great performance for Werribee that he might find himself on an AFL list. So wish him all the best. And I want to pull off one question without notice. I know this is a little bit weird, but I have to ask you, as my VFL person, I just came off the sandful where we had heard the talk of Port Adelaide trying to get over to the VFL. And your thoughts on this, because I know for many South Australians, the Port Adelaide Magpies, which again kind of somewhat don't exist, are looking to find their way into the VFL to kind of, I think, start the beginnings of maybe a AFL reserves comp. Your thoughts on potentially Port and maybe even Adelaide as well, jumping ship over to the VFL?
Well, Port Adelaide has put in an official application for 2025, as far as I've seen reported. So that's a big move. That'll make 15 AFL clubs with their reserves in the one comp if they were to get in. West Coast Eagles are the other one that is are probably the next one in line that have seriously been looking at it and checking out their finances as to whether they can afford it. And even though they've been on the bottom of the ladder for the last couple of years, they're still pretty close to the richest club in the competition with a massive waiting list to be members over there in Perth. So that would only leave the Adelaide Crows and Fremantle, aka Peel Thunder, as the holdouts there. So there are very, very strong and valid arguments in both camps here in Melbourne to an AFL reserves comp as opposed to leaving it the way it is. And I actually had a brief discussion about it on X during the week with one of the VFL presidents, and yeah, it was all very respectful and that sort of thing. They believe that there's no way it could work because it was tried in the late 1990s, and the corporate support and the eyeballs of the league and of the people sort of didn't go with the standalone clubs as they were then, and it sort of dropped off the radar a little bit, and I fully understand that. 25 years down the track, you would hope that whoever does it has learned from the mistakes of back then, if it was to happen, and they can make sure that a VFA, if it does re-establish, does have the support from head office so that it retains state league status, tier two status alongside the SANFL and the WAFL, with the AFL reserves not even really having a tier. It'd have to work on who the non-listed players are that are able to play in the AFL reserves teams, whether they're youngsters topping up out of the talent league or the Waffle Colts or the SANFL Colts in those states, that sort of thing. Because you'd probably need as many of the mature age blokes as possible, and ladies, if that was to happen, to be playing in the state league comp for the standalones to keep that quite strong. Personally, and nothing to do with my position, the job I hold, I've always been in favour of an AFL reserves competition coming back. I was never in favour of it being axed in the first place, when it was in 1996, I think it was. I believe the standalone clubs, and again, I haven't worked in any of the VFL standalone clubs, so this is an outsider's perspective. I would say they need, if they don't have to compete with the money and the resources that the AFL clubs have got, it would be so much easier for them. We're going to have, I believe, four standalones in the top eight this year. But the other three are, with all due respect to them, absolutely busting their proverbials just to stay afloat and just to be competitive in the competition. So if they didn't have to compete against AFL money and AFL resources, I reckon they could re-establish themselves pretty well. And then with the seven standalones we've got now, Box Hill, Casey, and Sandringham could potentially re-establish as standalones. Again, I don't know what their situations would be like if they didn't have Hawthorn, Melbourne, and St Kilda with them. And then you could maybe even see some of the former clubs come back, even from the country, like North Ballarat or Bendigo or clubs like that. And you could still have a very strong state league competition, 14 teams, 15, 16 teams even. And they would all be very competitive against each other. So that's my thought on it. And a lot of people, including the discussion the other day, gave extremely valid and well and experienced rebuttals to that. So it's something that'll be decided in the fullness of the next couple of years, but I don't see how 23 teams, or if Adelaide and Fremantle came in, how 25 teams could and Tasmania 26 could operate in a single team competition. They would have to go to two divisions with promotion and relegation, in my opinion. And then does Division Two lose its state league status anyway?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions, and I understand. And again, there's unintended consequences. I remember saying just with Port Adelaide and Adelaide, I said I understand your argument, but your argument also doesn't understand what's the financial impact of having to go to Victoria every other week, if not every 2 to 3 weeks in a month. That's going to start ringing up the bills pretty quickly. So I think that it's really easy to say, well, we're not getting coddled in the sample. Let's just go over to the VFL. There's a whole degree and a whole kind of range of new issues that could potentially pop up. So I love what you're saying there. It's great that the discussion is being there again. I think the AFL wants a reserves comp. Whether they care if they destroy the VFL in the process, I think is something. I think it's up for discussion, or at least I'm not sure how much they do or don't care on that one. So that'll be interesting. So
that's certainly not. It's certainly not the public line at the moment.
Nope.
to go for a reserves comp, I think it's more the AFL clubs themselves are the ones that are pushing for it rather than. Head office
makes sense.
But it seems like what the AFL clubs want, there's a fair chance they're probably going to get. That's why we've got such an interesting fixture this year, and that's why it took so long for the fixture to come out. Is fulfilling the requirements and the requests of 33 different clubs, 33 different teams across both competitions. You know, we're getting a lot of criticism, or not so much me, but head office is getting so much criticism about not getting the fixtures out early. That's why, because they're dealing with so many different wants and needs that it's impossible to get it all done in a reasonable time frame. Mm-hmm. And this year with the VFL fixture changing again to get the standalones playing against each other more. I like that part of it, but it also means there are more clubs that more matchups that are just not happening this year. I think Brisbane Lions, for example, have six other teams in the competition that they're not going to play at all in 2024. So that makes it a bit tougher. And I know that happens over in America in the NFL. With the conferences and that they only play half the teams, don't they? But you know, I don't necessarily like that. I'd like to see everyone play everyone, and if that meant there being 20 games as opposed to 18 or 22 games, well, or so be it. But there's a want from certain circles to have more buys as well, which allows for flexibility in the fixture.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's why
the fixture was so late. There's a little insight on that.
Yeah, and I can understand it. And like I said, it's again, you're never going to make 30. You're never going to make 33 teams every single one of them happy. You're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops to do that, unfortunately.
Exactly,
so right. So we will jump off to this, and we will kind of get into this season. So we go to my burning questions, because I have a few questions, and I know this first one is always interesting. I love it. Going into the women's, we'll start with the women's on this one. Is there a team that you are keeping an eye on this year that you are really looking forward to watching this year in the VFLW?
I don't want to put too much pressure on them, and I don't think there would be anyone else that would say it without looking at, you know, the comings and goings that have been announced and that sort of thing. But I think Darabin could be a sneaky, sneaky climber. And I'm saying that looking at a team that used to be the superpower of the competition. They won 8 premierships in 11 years before the AFLW era came in. They won the first two flags in this new VFLW competition. They're on a 21-match losing streak dating back to the middle of 2022. They've worked really hard on their recruiting and bringing experience into the club this year. They've picked up 5 players as of this week that played in Collingwood's grand final team last year, including the Collingwood captain in Caitlin Bunker, who has actually just been named as co-captain of Darebin alongside Steph Simpson, who has led the Falcons for the last 5 years. So the experience that those ladies are going to bring in. Riley Chris-Gurgle is another one who actually captained the Western Bulldogs to the 2019 grand final, lost to Collingwood before she switched to the Magpies. So what they've got coming in there, plus several others from other clubs, they've recruited very, very well. I know they're coming from a long way back, and I'm not going to put too many expectations on them, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what these recruits can bring, and I think Darebin will surprise a few people this year.
Fantastic. And it's great to see because Darebin is such a fantastic club. And as you said, it's got so much history. So to see them kind of out of the
The
doldrums.
icon of women's footy. They are the icon of
Exactly.
women's footy.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And it'll be great. And then we'll go to my next question, which is fun because I know but with both you and I being Swan supporters, this is an interesting topic, especially for you, even as a VFLW reporter is. What do you think of the addition of Sydney and GWS this year? Again, only 5 games, so they're really not kind of going to be eligible, shall we say? It will asterisk that eligible for finals. What do you think? How does this affect the comp? Besides kind of throwing a few kind of crazy changes to the fixture with 2 new teams only playing 5 games apiece.
Well, you look at it from the two angles there. And they've been doing it for the last few years in the talent league in the under 18s with the Swans and Giants academies. Before that, the New South Wales ACT Rams, the Lions and the Suns academies, they come in and they play, and the Northern Territory Academy over the last couple of years, they come in and play a handful of games at the start of the season, and then they disappear back into their own programs. These games, despite any misconceptions, are fully fledged games. So they are for premiership points for both teams, including the Swans and the Giants. As you just touched on, even if they go 5-0, they probably won't win enough games to make the top six. Last year it took 8 wins, I think, to finish in sixth spot. So they're not going to be playing in the finals, even if they're undefeated. You look at the potential for the development of the younger players in Sydney, both clubs, the juniors, the youngs that's coming through the Sydney AFL competition, and this would be absolutely fantastic for them. Players coming back from injury, potentially pushing for spots in the round one team, even though like round one of the AFLW comes a long time after round seven of the VFLW. There's still what, seven, four, four, it's still 4 months. So it's basically a mini pre-season and trials for these players in that 5-week period. So that's going to be terrific for them. On the negative side is, to me, is of course it's altered the fixture significantly in that some teams or 6 teams have to travel interstate for a game. That has been restricted to AFLW clubs, so Darebin and Williamstown don't have to do that. They don't have to play against the Swans or Giants at all, home or away. The 7 Victorian, no, sorry, I'm on the other side there with the VFL. But yeah, the past 3 years, the 12 teams got divided into groups of four. And they were the 3 teams that you played twice. So if you finished on top, you had second games against 2, 3, and 4, and so on down the line. That's changed this year because of these extra games that have been thrown in, and it's created a hard fixture for teams that were down the bottom. And Darebin's one of those. They've actually got all their double up games are against teams who made the finals last year. So that's a real challenge for them to overcome, and why you can't put too many expectations on them. Hopefully they can do it. I think it does affect the integrity of the competition just a little bit. I would love to have seen the Swans and the Giants come in fully, playing the full 14 games or 16 games or however many games they decided to play, and be fully in the competition. Hopefully that will happen next year after they get a taste of it. Some people said, well, maybe they didn't want to do that because then that reduces the gap and the preparations for the AFLW season. And I say, well, the AFLW clubs in the VFLW have the exact same situation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they do protect the number of minutes and number of games that their AFLW listed players play throughout the course of the year. And as the season gets down to the business end towards the finals, they do play less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing to suggest that the Swans and Giants can't do that as well. So hopefully it's a precursor to full involvement next year. But at this stage, it's a test. It's a trial. We'll see how it goes.
It's a little appetizer when it comes to it. It'll be interesting, especially. And I think it's great for development. As you said, I hope that next year they're in the VFL and VFLW, the VFLW competition, because I think it would be only good for the development of women's footy as a whole. So you kind of touched on it a little bit with my next question is, after falling short, Collingwood had such a great year, falling short in the grand final, can they get back to a grand final this year? Or are some of the losses over the offseason that you just talked about going to hamper the Pies?
I have no doubt they will. The competition was so close last year. Collingwood finished on top of the ladder with 9 wins and 5 losses, and North Melbourne finished 9th with 7-7. So North Melbourne were 9th. They were only 2 games behind top of the ladder. So losing 5 key players, including a captain and a vice captain, that's a huge impost to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to get a lot of correspondence with Collingwood over their VFLW list as to what they've brought in. But I would think that they're going to have, they're traditionally a strong team. They've been up there pretty much every year since they came into the competition. So they've got a terrific program and they'll go all right. But it would be a massive achievement for them if they were to retain that lofty position up the ladder.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe a few too many holes to fill, but we'll definitely have to see. Again, Collingwood is always usually a strong side. It'll be fun to watch. And then we have to talk about it. Port Melbourne finding a way to win a premiership last year. Can they repeat? Or is there another team that you're looking at that you think could be a strong contender to win a flag this year in the VFLW?
As we have said about the Port Melbourne Football Club for 150 years, obviously not me, but as people have said about the Port Melbourne Football Club for 150 years, never, ever write off Port Melbourne. Williamstown is the same. But never, ever write them off, because even the men have been down for the past couple of years, but they exist to win, and they know exactly what it takes to win, and they always have. They won a VFLW premiership in their 3rd year in the competition and their 4th year of existence. That's just a remarkable achievement. And they did it without any... They are aligned in VFLW, of course, to Richmond. But they did it with very minimal player input from Richmond. I don't think they fielded any more than 3 or 4 players in any game, and they would have hardly fielded any in the second half of the year. That affected them badly in 2022. They dropped right off after making the finals in their 1st year with a strong alignment. They went and recruited who they wanted to sort of fill that hole, and they were able to do that last year. And they just kept going. They just kept going. They lost to Collingwood convincingly in the qualifying final. They come back. They only just squeak over Carlton in the semi. And then You thought, well, how are they going to get past a powerful team like Essendon on a roll in a preliminary final? And they smacked them. And then turned the tables on Collingwood. That's just what Port Melbourne do. They, from what I can gather from speaking to them, they have kept the majority of their team together. So they will be up and around the mark again, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see them playing off again in a very even competition. They could finish, and Casey Demons will bounce back too this year. So they could have a very similar season and miss the finals. That
Crazy.
that's how close it is. They won a few games by a couple of points here and there. You lose them, and all of a sudden you're seventh, eighth, ninth. Picking another contender for the flag, well, that's something that I find really, really hard to do because, as I said, there's just nothing between anyone. It comes down to injuries. It comes down to how many players the AFLW section of the club releases to play in VFLW, how the development of the younger ones coming up goes. There are potentially 10 premiership contenders. So, and you could not ask for a better competition than that. And that is with all due respect to Darabin, who have recruited brilliantly and are coming from a lot, but are coming from a long way back, and the Western Bulldogs, who are still in development mode from that 1 year ahead of Darabin. But they played in a grand final in 2019. So, and they've got their home ground back this year. So who knows what they could do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely insane. But the best part is that you look at it and you go, okay, this is going to be a competitive year. Anybody could beat anybody on any given day. It makes for a ton of
Exactly.
excitement. And then you throw in that little spice again, whether you like it or not, the spice of the GWS and Sydney games will make things even more interesting to see how both of those clubs handle those five VFL games. So we'll jump from the men, from the women over to the men, and we'll start with the same question we started with the women. Is there a team that you are keeping an eye on this year in the men's competition?
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm looking at the two standalones that I've been speaking about ad nauseum, as I reckon being big climbers. The first one of those is the Southport Sharks, who played in the grand final in 2022, but dropped down to 14th last year on the back of a heap of injuries. They were absolutely crippled by injuries last year, and it cost them badly. They've retained all the key pillars of their 2022-2023 teams. They've made a lot of changes and tweaks around the fringe. Their recruiting has been very strong. If they can re-establish the home ground advantage, the biggest surprise last year was they lost four games at home to interstate opposition last year, which just didn't happen in 2022. They turned those four games around, and they're back in the top six. And you've only got to win a couple of others, and you're back in the top four, and you're right there. So they're going to come right up the ladder. I think Port Melbourne is the other one to really keep an eye on, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they go in their practice match this weekend against Frankston. They have recruited marvelously well. All the positions on the ground that they felt they had a hole, they haven't filled them with one player. They've filled them with two and sometimes three in places. Couple of things have gone wrong with them already on the injury front, but I don't think that those particular injuries are going to make a massive amount of difference given the depth that they've brought in. They've also got quite a friendly fixture under the standalone double up set up, in that they're going to play Frankston, Coburg, and the Northern Bull Ants twice each. And again, I love using the term with all due respect, because we would love to see those teams fire up and come up the ladder and really make their presence felt. But Port Melbourne will go into those six games thinking that they would be very, very confident of winning those six games. And then out of the then they've only got to find four out of the other 12 to make the top 10, six to make the top eight. And yeah, so I see them being at least in the top eight, Port Melbourne, and potentially even the top six. So which with Williamstown and Werribee, who I think will still be around the mark, we could have four standalones in the top eight, and that would make for a marvelous season. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
Definitely, for sure. It would be great to see. And we'll definitely have to keep an eye on it. So speaking of unattached. Werribee was the standout last year, getting all the way to the grand final, unfortunately falling short to a very good Gold Coast team. Can they repeat this incredible season that they had, finishing second and falling just short? Or will some of the losses, including Sean Monahan, be a little bit too difficult and we'll see Werribee tumble down the ladder this year?
A lot of people have got them falling simply because of the experience that they've lost. We're talking dual list and medalist Tom Gribble, 140 games. We're talking Michael Sotomarco, 135 games. Matt Hansen, 102 games. Sean Manor, 73. They've lost, I think I could go and do the math, but they've lost probably 600-700 games of experience from their top five or six players. What they haven't lost is their quality. They've been preparing for these guys to move on for the last two or three years while they've been having this massive crack at winning that elusive flag. And those guys underneath them, we got Dom Brew, who will play his 100th game this year. He's a best and fairest winner. Jack Henderson will play his 100th game. The captain, Nick Coghlan, will play his 100th game in round one. So there's still a heap of experience there. There's only, I think, maybe a dozen or 1,500 gamers in the competition, and Werribee will still have, by the end of the year, that might be 24 or 25, and Werribee will probably have five or six of them still.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still going to be a very powerful club. They've got a strong home ground advantage. They've got a very passionate supporter base who gets right behind them. I think it'll be a massive challenge for them to go quite as well as last year, which was 16-2 in the home and away season. But the people that expect them to drop any further than probably sixth at the absolute worst are certainly going to probably be licking the egg off their faces by the end of the year, because the Tigers are still going to be right there in the mix for top four positions late in the season, I think.
It'll be fun to watch it. And again, as you said, when you've got a ton of experience, sometimes they can defy a lot. So you kind of threw a few names out earlier with the teams to watch. But I asked this, will we see some new faces this year in the hunt for finals? As you kind of said, you're looking at Southport, who has been there before, Port Melbourne. But could we see like a resurgence of a Sydney? Could we see Carlton, GWS, or Geelong potentially get up there? Your thoughts on who you think are kind of looking at that finals contention? Because again, 10 spots, but you've got 21 teams fighting over those 10 spots.
Definitely Carlton, of course. They were in the top 10 for the entire season pretty much last year and finished 11th on percentage with an absolute horror show that they put in against the Gold Coast Suns in round 22 up in Queensland when they lost by 21 goals. And it took them, I think it ended up being with North Melbourne were 11th, lost, and still jumped into the finals because of the magnitude of that Carlton defeat. Mm-hmm. So I think we worked out that they could have lost by 12 goals or 12 or 13 goals, Carlton, in that last game and still stayed in 10th spot. They lost by 21 goals. For those who follow football, Aussie football, and want to compare that to the NFL, that's like getting beaten 50 points to three in an mm-hmm. NFL game in the last game to throw away your playoff spot. So they would expect to be back in the top 10 and they would be a huge chance to do so. But I'm also going to put the heat on Sydney. Made the top four in 2022, went out in straight sets. Had, again, with Southport, had a power of injuries at AFL level and VFL level last year. Most games they had an average age and talk. I thought their average age was around about 21 in most games last year. Talking to Damien Truslove, the coach, yesterday, he said in at least 7 or 8 games, they had an average age of 19. It's very, very hard to compete when you're that young and that inexperienced, and these are academy kids, so they haven't developed yet. They weren't all the AFL listed kid youngsters, because those ones were in the seniors. They were in the AFL team because there were so many players out. When the AFL team got their numbers back, you saw what the Swans did in the second half of the year at AFL level, charged into the finals. The VFL team didn't win a game before round 11, but in consecutive weeks late in the season, they won 2 games by over 80 points. They had 17 AFL listed players in a practice match against the Giants yesterday. I'm not sure how many the Giants had, but they had names like Angus Sheldrick, Sam Reed, Peter Laddams, all running around the seconds. And they beat the on Thursday, they beat the Giants by 119 points in a practice match, held them to just one goal. So I know you can't read a lot into practice matches, but we know the quality that the Swans have got on the list. And we know that if they stay fit, I would expect the VFL team to potentially fly almost all the way back up to where they were. Obviously, a close competition, anything can happen. And don't ask me to find the four teams that are going to drop out of the top 10 for these four to come in, but that's the beauty of the competition.
Yeah, and that's kind of the crazy thing about it. And again, it's one of those where, and you just don't know. I mean, what if a team that was in the finals has that same injury issues that Sydney has? There's a lot. Again, there's so many permutations. Again, with so many teams on that. So, and then we'll go to it. The premiers of last year, Gold Coast, were the class of the VFL. I mean, they were so difficult to beat. So many good, talented guys that were probably AFL caliber, but just couldn't find their way into the system last year. Can they repeat now under Damien Hardwick up in the top AFL, and how things will change there? Or did the losses of Marbio Chole and Burgess and some of the really talented players that were down in that VFL squad, will those talent lost weaken this Gold Coast team this year?
You would have thought so. You definitely would have thought so. 14 players, I think, from the Premiership team are no longer on the Gold Coast for different reasons, either traded or delisted or retired. Like that's 2/3 of your team. And I think 4 of their top 5 goal scorers, taking in over 200 goals, have gone. One of the guys who was at the top of the goal scoring list that is still there, Alex Sexton, is now playing in defence as well. So it'll be very interesting to see. I expected that, yeah, they'd find it a bit tough, but in the 5th and 6th quarters of that game against Brisbane Lions the other night, they beat the Lions across 2 quarters, 71-25. And the Lions made the preliminary final last year and are expected to be very powerful again. So, yeah, I they certainly can repeat on if you take one half of a practice match into account, then yeah, they certainly can repeat. But yeah, it'll be a massive effort if they can do it with almost completely a new squad.
Yeah, and it'll be, and plus the other thing you gotta look at it too is that what type of systems will Damien Hardwick system with the AFL squad come down, and will you see growing pains of that adjustment down in the VFL? So that'll be another one too. So we'll get to the part that I think sometimes can make you a little bit chuckle when you look back on it. We'll do some predictions. We won't take this super seriously. I'm not going to go back and go, ha
Please
ha ha,
don't.
if we get it, but we'll do it like this. We'll have a little bit of fun right now. As you look at it, we'll start with the women's. I want to get the ugly out first. Who do you think is going to be the wooden spooner this year in the women's competition?
I'm pretty sure everyone else will be picking Darabin, and it's pretty hard to find someone to drop down below them with their recruits, and I've said they're the team to watch and one that's probably going to win a few games this year. It's going to make the competition even tighter. I'm really stuck on that one. I am. I'm really stuck.
And technically, we
Potentially,
can't
like
count Sydney
I
or
haven't heard anything
GWS's.
from the Western Bulldogs. I haven't heard anything from the Western Bulldogs about what they've done recruit-wise, that sort of thing. You know, they could improve and still drop down to last. I'm trying to remember they have Casey Demons finished 10th. You'd expect them with the Melbourne program to improve. North Melbourne was 9th. You expect them to improve. I've gone completely blank on Southern Saints finished 7th. Geelong dropped to 8th after being in the top six for most of the year. Do they fall away? Yeah, so I'm going to say the Bulldogs, but there's no disrespect intended there, and it's only because I expect Darabin to improve significantly, and I don't know enough about what the Dogs have done at the moment.
Well, and we can't. I don't think we can put GWS and Sydney in there because with only five games, do they qualify for this wooden spoon? You wouldn't think
I should
so.
have done that, didn't I? I should have just said GWS are going to finish last.
We'll have to see. I didn't want to add them since they only came in with since they only come in with five games. I don't know if they would. I don't know if you could count a team that only plays five games for
Yeah,
wooden
that's
spoon
it. The easy answer. The easy answer is that the Swans and the Giants will probably finish 13th and 14th.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
We'll have to see. All right. Biggest, and it's kind of the same situation here. Is the biggest faller, what team is going to descend on the ladder the farthest?
I'm going to say Collingwood, but only because they're coming from such a lofty position of first in after the home and away season, and in such an even comp, losing those players are going to make it a challenge. They could still finish first. They could drop as far as 9th or 10th as they reset. So I'll say them. We asked the question, like Williamstown were a big spike last year, played finals for the first time. Can they back it up? So that's a question mark there. And the same with Carlton, who made the finals for the first time. Can they back it up? But they could drop three positions potentially, and Collingwood could drop six or seven. So that would make Collingwood the biggest faller, only because they were higher to start with.
All righty. So now we'll go the other way. Who's the biggest improver? I know you said you're high on Darabin with some of their moves. Can they be the biggest jumper up the ladder, or will we see another team be the biggest improver in the women's comp?
Yeah, I see them being the biggest improver, Darabin, but they're coming from so far back that they're probably not going to jump the highest number of positions to just throw a caveat into the question there. You know, they had a percentage last year of about 14. The big thing is being more competitive in games. The Bulldogs did that from 2022 to 2023. They only won three games. But they improved their percentage from 12 to somewhere in the 80s, I think. So that's the first step that Darabin need to look at is building their competitiveness. And if they win three or four games, then that's their step forward. I think the biggest climber, ladder positions wise, is North Melbourne. They finished 9th last year. They were right in finals contention for most of the year. I think they were even on top early on at one stage. Their AFLW team is coming off a grand final appearance. So that they've got a very strong, very powerful squad. It's well set up at the moment. And they've only got to win, as I mentioned earlier, they've only got to win three more games and they finish on top of the ladder, potentially. So North Melbourne to fly up from 9th and probably make the finals this year.
Awesome. Now I'm going to change this a little bit from the original, because originally I put the finals teams, and I know this isn't easy because with six teams making it, so I'm going to adjust it just the littlest bit. I just want, who do you think are going to be the top four in the women's competition? We'll make it a little bit easier. I know it's not easy with the evenness of this competition, but the top four teams at the end of the home and away season in the AFLW in the VFLW.
As I said, could be anybody. I'm going to say Port Melbourne's going to stay there. I'm going to put North Melbourne in as the big climber for the year. Essendon should be around the mark again. They've got a really good setup going at the moment, and they've brought in a very strong coach in Sheree O'Neill, who coached Box Hill the last couple of years to very good seasons. And again, I'm going to go for Box Hill to probably be the fourth one. That's the one that we haven't touched on at all this year, but they're just always there. They seem to fly along under the radar, but they're always there. So that means I've got Collingwood and Williamstown dropping out of the top four, not necessarily out of the top six, but we'll certainly see what happens. But just to keep it simple for me, that's where we'll leave it at those four.
It makes it a little bit easier, but then it can puts a little bit of intrigue because I go, who do you think are going to be the two teams playing off in the grand final? If you could look at your magic eight ball, who are the two teams you see playing off in a grand final this year?
History says under the final system that it's most likely to be the teams that finish in those top two spots, because they've got such a leg up with the double chance. The team that finishes third is a big chance as well, even though they could go out of the finals in the first week, which they did last year, being Williamstown. Or if they win that first game, then they find themselves having a double chance. So it's a weird final system. I don't think anyone can have a top six final system that's fair to all. It's as simple as that. And I wouldn't have a top six. I'd either have it as a top five or a top eight. Even though eight would mean a lot of teams make the finals out of it, and in a effectively a 12 team comp. I think that me it makes it fairer for the teams at the top to do that. So that's again me speaking on a personal opinion. I'm going to stick with those two that I've been talking about. I think Port Melbourne might be able to be there again. You're going to ask me in a minute to tell who's going to win this theoretical grand
It's
final.
like he knows.
I'm going to say maybe Essendon might bounce back, and after making the preliminary final last year, though I think they might be there as well.
Okay. All right. And then premiers. So yeah, premiers is Essendon. So it'll be fascinating. So we'll jump over to the men's, and I think we'll do it the same way. Same thing with the finals teams. We'll just do the top four. So wooden spoon. Who's getting the wooden spoon this year, in the men's competition?
Sad to say, and again, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm go going to put that Moz on the Northern Bull Ants, which is yeah, certainly hurts me to say that. They're a terrific bunch of blokes over there. They're battling really hard. They're putting in everything that they physically can, but they've lost, I think, out of their squad of 44 last year. They've turned over well over 30 of them. So they're a completely new team. They'll get their inspirational co-captain back in Liam Mackey, who missed most of last season due to injury. So that's a big help for them. They've kept their best player, their breakout player in best and fairest winner, Jean-Luc Velisarris. So he could certainly spark them up the ladder. They've also got Don't forget, they also produced two AFL draftees last year from a team that only won two games. Of course, Brandon Ryan taken by Hawthorn in the mid-season draft, and then Finbar Maile by North Melbourne in the rookie draft at the end of the year. So they are producing players for the next level. There is plenty of talent there, but I just think from having finished 20th last year and lost what they've lost, they're probably going to drop down, and Coburg will break their losing streak and win a couple of games to go above them.
All righty, then we go. Biggest faller. What team's going to descend down the ladder in the men's comp?
This one all depends on fitness, doesn't it? on injuries and who could fall, who can get their best teams on the park. Some people will certainly say Gold Coast because of the 14 players they've lost out of their premiership team. Some will say Werribee because of the top end experience that they've lost. Again, I haven't got either of them falling a significant distance. Footscray, I think, will come up. Box Hill's always around the mark. Brisbane Lions are around the mark as well. I'm racking my brain to find one right here at the moment. I'm going to ask the question and put the heat on the Casey Demons, who finished seventh last year. Richmond is potentially another one. We'll touch on them in a minute. The Casey Demons finished seventh last year after only losing one game the year before. There are obviously some issues with player health and fitness and certain things going on at Melbourne at AFL level, which obviously the Demons will be hoping to deal with and sort out. But if they can't, well, then that pulls players up from the Casey team and into the Melbourne team and weakens them a little bit. So very hard to see who could be a slider from inside the top eight. But I think Casey's the first one to look at. Richmond potentially under a new AFL coach. You know, it's hard to know what they might do. You'd expect Collingwood to be around the mark, being an AFL premiership club. And North Melbourne, can they back up what they did last year when they won six or seven games in a row through the middle of the year to make the finals? Or will it be sort of a second year of development throughout the club? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll say Casey.
Okay. Now that we've got the negative out of the way, we'll go to the positive. Biggest improver, who's jumping up the ladder the most this year in the men's competition?
Well, we've already touched on three of them, haven't we? Mm-hmm. We've got Southport from 14th into the top six. We've got Port Melbourne from 15th for me into the top eight. We've got Sydney from 18th, certainly into the top eight. So they're all potential double figure climbers. Mm-hmm. I think given that they're coming from 18th so far back, they dropped from 6th to 18th, and I think they'd get back at least to 6th. So I'm going to say Sydney, which would be a 12 position climb if they got back up into the 6th or 7th spot.
All righty. Now the fun one. 21 teams, but we got to do it. Who are going to be the top four at the end of the year in the VFL?
Footscray, they started terribly at the end of last season, at the start of last season. Charged home, won 12 games in a row before running out of steam in a semi-final against a battle-hardened Box Hill team. So I think they from sixth don't have to do too much more to get up into the top four. Very hard to write Box Hill off. I think they'll be around the mark as well. Williamstown, potentially Brisbane Lions. You know, I'm getting more than four now, aren't I? And I haven't mentioned Gold Coast yet. So it's
the way it goes, unfortunately.
I'm not sure I can really limit them to four. I'll say Gold Coast, Footscray. Gold Coast, Footscray, probably Brisbane Lions, and any one of, you want me to get off the fence, probably any one of Williamstown, Box Hill, or Werribee, and Southport in that mix there as well. Give me Williamstown.
It's such a tight competition. I know. I almost asked you to do the 10, but again, then you're gonna go, oh, I left this person out. So I thought I was making it easier, and I probably made it 10.
Yeah, you actually made it harder in this case.
Exactly. Alrighty. So we'll make it even more fun. Grand final teams. Who are the two teams that you think will be playing off for the flag at the end of the year?
Again, the first one that jumped into my mind there was Footscray. They have lost a fair a little bit out of their second tier. You can't read anything into the big win they had over Box Hill yesterday because they had five or six absolute Western Bulldogs champions in their team. Bontempelli, English, Treloar all played for Footscray yesterday. So don't read anything into that one. I'm going to. I put the heat on Brisbane Lions last year. I'm not sure if I can quite do that again this year. I'm going to say that Gold Coast is potentially there again, and Footscray.
Alrighty. And then we'll go there. Premiers. Who's raising the flag at the end of that game?
This decision could change in the next 4 weeks before round one as well when I do my season preview. So don't shoot me if you see the season preview and see that it's different, because we don't really know exactly what Footscray has recruited as yet. They are very, very quiet, which either means they've got nothing, or they've recruited really well and they're just not telling us about it. If I put Gold Coast and Footscray in the grand final, yeah, at this stage, yeah, I'll say the Bulldogs, but we'll yeah, I reserve the right to change before round one.
I will be perfectly okay with that. I'm not going to hold you too close to it because again, there's still a lot of things that can happen. We have nearly a month before the season starts, but I wanted to get this taken care of so then we could kind of have this in the bank. And I know that this is going to be an insane season again. It sounds like both competitions are going to be absolutely magnificent. Brendan, I know I've run you through the ringer, and again, I want to thank you again so much. Your knowledge of the game, what you do for the VFL is absolutely fantastic. So thank you again for hopping on again this year to the podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure, Donnie. It's great to, as I've said in the past, to help take this great game to the world. And yeah, with an international cup of sorts coming up this year, we look forward to seeing how the USA go, and as they continue to develop playing our great game.
Yeah, it'll be absolutely fantastic. I know that Brian Barrish with the USAFL is super excited that Canada is so close that he's going to be able to attend those. So I'm looking forward. It's going to be fantastic. But again, cannot wait for footy. I know that it's coming up very, very soon. I know that the Sandful Women and the Waffle Women both get started almost a week from today. So I am super, super excited. But again, we will definitely make sure that we will cover the Victorian, both women and men this year. We will have Brendan back on at least once a month to try to go through it with so many teams. We may even try to do twice a month just because there's so much footy to cover. So again, keep an eye out. More coverage coming up very, very soon. That is going to do it for another episode of Donnie's Disposals and the VFL Vantage. Keep an eye out. More footy coverage. AFL is getting closer and footy season is almost back. I cannot wait. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back again very, very soon with more footy coverage in your ears.